Oh, may the words which will be in my mouth now and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord our God, Redeemer and our strength. Please take your seats. In Syriac, some fathers of the church would write poetic homilies, and such a sermon's called a memra. What would it be like, I've often wondered, if I tried my hand at one in English without rhyme? Tonight we've heard how God in ages past has raised his strong and mighty hand to save his people. Why would he have done such things? God doesn't need us for his self-esteem. Before creation ever was, within his Trinity, he's always had a self-sufficient love and overflowing joy. But then that love flowed out, and he created this whole universe, and everything he saw was very good. And then we came and sullied everything. Now, muse with me. This really blows my mind. Why didn't God just wipe our parents, Eve and Adam, out immediately when they ate the fruit? Instead, he came to find them when they hid, in shame and terror from his holiness. God did pronounce some curses, but he also gave to them a most surprising promise that he would raise from their offspring one to crush the head of their most clever foe, though in the act he also would be hurt. How crazy that he didn't simply wash his hands of us because of our new messy brokenness. Instead, he sought them out and took initiative with his redeeming love, restoring them to fellowship, though consequences of their sin remain. And later, when the evil of the human race almost made God regret creating us, he graciously saved Noah's family, 8 people, and the animals as well, in order not to make his promise void. And then he picked a wandering Aramean for his friend and called a childless man to follow him. And Abram's faith was grown through many trials, including even offering his beloved son of promise, Isaac, to the Lord. And from this son and his son's sons, God grew a people for himself. And he protected them when food was scarce in Joseph's time by sending them to Egypt, where, redeeming nearly fratricidal jealousy, he had prepared the way by making Joseph the new grand vizier. And later, when a new king rose who had forgotten Joseph and the people were oppressed as slaves, God told a reject shepherd, Moses, "Go and challenge Pharaoh by declaring to his face, 'Now hear the words that Yahweh says, you let my people go.'" But Pharaoh asked, his voice drenched in contempt, "And who exactly is this Yahweh God that I, the living Horus, son of Ra, should pay attention to these words today to lose my free, convenient labor force?" In answer to this flippant hubris, God afflicted Egypt and its Pharaoh with blood, frogs, gnats, flies, pest, locusts, boils, and hail. Through all these plagues, he kept his people safe. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened more and more. And when God sent a 3-day darkness, Pharaoh still refused to let the people go. So God, in order that he might be known in all his holy majesty, prepared a 10th plague, worse than all that came before. Each firstborn child in all of Egypt's land would die, unless, obeying God's direct command, the family sacrificed a lamb and put its blood upon their door, so that the slaying angel would pass over them. Thus, on that night, God set his people free from bondage, physical, in Egypt, and they plundered all their neighbors of their wealth. The neighbors were relieved to see them leave. Though Pharaoh soon decided it was sad that all his slaves were gone. So, mustering his army, he pursued the Israelites. He found them by the sea. "They're trapped like rats," he thought. But God had other plans in mind. Restraining all his foes, God sent an east wind to prepare a way across the sea. And so his people walked across dry shod. But Pharaoh's chariots, when they could pursue, sank in the mud, and all his army drowned. So this momentous act established God's new people, Israel, and they discovered just how great a God they had. For us, the story of this Exodus must be the greatest adumbration of God's work at Easter through great David's greater son. But words would fail me to expound this well. St. Gregory of Nazianzus preached an Easter sermon more than 1,600 years ago, in which he meditated on this better than I can. He said, "Yesterday the lamb was slaughtered, and the doorposts were anointed, and the Egyptian firstborn were lamented, and the angel of destruction passed us over, for we were encircled by the precious blood. Today, we've clean escaped from Egypt and from Pharaoh's bitter despotism and the overseer's whips, for now we're freed from mud and bricks. So now there's no one to prevent us. We can celebrate a feast of exodus to God our Lord, and feast not with the old yeast of wickedness and evil, but unleavened bread of sincere truth, not bringing with us Egypt's godless yeast. Yesterday I was crucified with Christ. Today I'm glorified with him. Yesterday I died with him. Today with him I'm made alive. Yesterday we had a common funeral. Today we're raised again as one. So therefore, let us offer unto him who for our sake both suffered and was raised a fitting offering, not, as you think I'll say, of money or of precious goods, things of the earth which must remain below and which are mostly coveted by evil men, slaves of the world and of its prince. No, let us offer up ourselves to God. For we, as living sacrifices, are most precious unto him. It's right to give back to the image what is made in his own likeness, honoring our archetype. Let us now know the mystery's great power, and why exactly did Christ have to die? Let us become like Christ, since he became like us. Let us be God's own for his sake, since he, for our sake, humbly took our form. He took the worst to give to us the best, and he was poor, that through his poverty we might be rich. He took a servant's form that we might get our freedom back, and he came down so that we could ascend. Temptations came to him that we might conquer them. On earth, he was dishonored so that he could glorify. He died to save, and he ascended that he might draw up to him all those who through the fall lay low in sin. Now, therefore, we should give to him our all. Not just our wealth or property or even our good deeds, as if a multitude of things we've done for him could ever pay our debt of sin. No, we must give ourselves to him who gave himself a ransom and exchange for us. For we can give him nothing that is better than ourselves, becoming for his sake what he for us became.